Today, we welcome from Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, Dylan Tabish.
Hey, good morning, John. Happy New Year.
And right back at you, man. You know, I don't know. I guess you never want to look a gift horse in the mouth, but we got, what, 100 and some acres there along the north shore of Flathead Lake. And what a wonderful gift and what a wonderful thing from the Slider family. But with it, we had to build it out, and we got a couple of issues we got to deal with.
Yeah, so we did buy the Summers Beach State Park property in October, and it's a project that we've been working on for many years.
With and a heck of a bargain, we might say.
Yeah, really, really cool. The Slider family, longtime local family, who's owned that property since the 1920s, and over the years has allowed public access to what I think is one of the neatest pieces of landscape I've ever been on. If anybody's ever been to that Summers Beach, you know, and the ironic thing is most people think of summertime as the best time to be on Flathead Lake, but that Summers Beach property in wintertime, you know, January, February, March, when the lake is receded and it reveals this giant sandy beach, it is a magical place. It truly is. I'm sure you've been there before, John, and I took my wife on our first date there, and
really?
So it's just an amazing, magical place. And it's really the access to that property is pretty limited for the North Shore of Flathead Lake, and so the Slider family had allowed public access for decades, but you know they were looking to make sure that it was properly maintained forever for public access. And so they've reached out to us. They worked with us in the Flathead Land Trust, who were really good partners in trying to figure out how to make this work. And long story short, we were lucky to get a ton of public support to purchase that property, legislative support to purchase that property, and now we own it. But like you said, you know, like when you buy a piece of property, you got to take care of it. And so we are trying to take care of it in a number of ways. The first one is, like you mentioned, that whole North Shore is deals with erosion issues. I mean, really the whole Flathead River to Lake corridor has erosion issues and for a variety of reasons, you know, the fluctuating lake levels, the type of sediment, you know, it's that kind of silty, sandy sediment, wave action from boats. So we want to make sure that, you know, we keep that property intact. We don't want to lose any of that nice, beautiful beachfront property. So we're going to throw in some, or we're proposing, I should say, to throw in some erosion control structures that we've used on other pieces of property.
That's not unusual for that chunk of shore.
No. And other private landowners have used these types of structures, and we've used it down on the east side of the North Shore there at Osprey View, where we've tried to make sure that we don't lose any of that shoreline. Yeah.
So this is not we're not trying some new technology or anything like that. This has worked before.
Yep, nope. It's a pretty old school strategy for really kind of fortifying your shoreline. And so we're asking for public comment, though. We want the public to look at our plans and give us input on them so that it meets what they think is the best answer to this problem. And yeah, so it's one of many developments that we're going to look at for this property in the interim. You know, we just finished up with a public comment period that got a lot of support for putting in a temporary parking lot and some portable toilets, because we really want to address, now that we own this property, we want to make sure that it meets sanitation and safety needs. And so, you know, we don't want folks going out there and using no restroom. And so we're putting in some interim things like that for safety and sanitation. Excuse me.
Yeah.
But in the long term, we need to figure out what's the best plan for this state park. And so everyone should stay tuned for that longer term process where we sit down and we come up with some ideas for the long-term use of that park and that facility. And so that'll be another public process in the next, you know, coming year or two.
Okay. You know, that's the thing. There are a lot of possibilities. And, you know, now is the time to put those possibilities out there. Let's consider them all now, because once we build it, it's a little late.
Right. And you know, as anybody who uses our state parks and trails and other public lands knows, you know, the demand and the use is only increasing. And so we really need to be wise and vigilant with how we work on these projects, because like you said, once they're developed, but also, you know, we need to be planning what's the best use for these properties. You know, is it camping? Is it day use only? Is it trails? Is it a kiosk? You know, is it boat launching? Is it hand launching? Is it, you know, so there's all kinds of things that go into good planning, and we want to make sure, and that's why the input of the public is critical to making the best decisions we can. And because everybody's kind of got different ideas for what they would like that to be. And so it's, you never can please everybody. So you just try to find common ground in certain things and values.
But the important thing we have to do now while the lake is down is we got to do something about that erosion.
Right, yes.
And the deadline for the comments on that is a week from this coming Thursday, right?
Yep, correct. And it's January 24th,
I think so.
Yes, yeah. And so we'll be having an informational meeting online that folks can go to our FWP website and log in and ask any questions they have on January 18th, so next Tuesday. And yeah, so it's just another fun public project that I think a lot of folks are really excited about the possibility, especially Flathead Lake, you know, such a magical, amazing amenity that we're so lucky. Sometimes I almost forget and take for granted that we have this gem of a lake just right here. And however, there's only, you know, approximately 11% of the shoreline open to the public. And so that's really what motivated us to look at access for Flathead Lake, is so that families, regardless of means and whether they don't have to own property on Flathead Lake to be able to enjoy that amazing lake. And so that's why parks like this one are so awesome.
You know, when I was a kid, a lot of my friends had property, little cabins on Flathead Lake. I mean, they were little two room cabins, and that was all it was. And, that's changed. And as a result, we have to really protect those areas we do have left.
Yep. Yeah. You know, you think about, some other states, you know, whenever I go visit around and you see these great lakes and it's like, oh, let's go check it out. Like, well, there's not a public access on
that lake.
Take
a look at Lake Coeur d'Alene.
Well, there you go. Prime example.
Take a look at Lake Coeur d'Alene.
Yeah. I think that's something we find when we propose projects like this, that it gets a lot of really universal support, because people, regardless of their political or social values, they understand that right there, you don't have to be wealthy to appreciate something like Flathead Lake. And so that's something we really look for, but we also understand we need to be good neighbors and we need to be good managers of these properties. And so that's why projects like these erosion control projects, you know, are to really not only protect our property, but we don't want to be causing negative impacts on our neighbors. Now that we are an owner of land there on Flathead Lake, we don't want to be hurting our neighbors.
All right. So the Summers Lake Beach Project, let's get our comments in. Let's get them in now.
Yeah, absolutely.
All right. Now, I'm not really sure if I totally understand the full breadth and meaning of this 772-acre purchase there near Columbia Falls. Is this a connective sort of a thing that we did?
Yeah, so we worked with the landowner there, Columbia Falls Aluminum Company, and Flathead Land Trust, again, was a great kind of partner to help connect dots between us and the landowner and private fundraising. And we were given the opportunity by CFAC to purchase that open, undeveloped piece of property along the Flathead River just outside of Columbia Falls, across the river from the former aluminum company site, or aluminum plant site, I mean. And it's, for us, it's critical wildlife habitat. It's right there, kind of where, you know, the Swan Range meets the Whitefish Range. It's connectivity for, it's a huge winter range for elk and deer. It's connectivity zone. It's a migratory corridor for grizzly bears. It's along the Flathead River, which is a critical corridor for water quality, for fish species like bull trout. It also is a popular place where for years Columbia Falls Aluminum Company has allowed hunting in there. And so we've used it because it's a little close to town. We haven't just opened it up, but we've enrolled it in the block management program as a youth-only area where youth can go in and hunt. And you could have some amazing stories told by fathers and mothers who have taken their sons or daughters out there to go hunting, who have shot nicer elk than I've ever shot. And so it's really been a cool property for many years. And they approached us and offered to sell it to us. And this was, again, similar to Summers Beach. We were very interested, but we said, let's see what the public thinks. And I don't think I've ever seen more overwhelming support for a project than I did this Bad Rock Canyon. Not only did people speak up with support to say, yes, you should purchase this property and create it, protect it for conservation and public access. But people put their money where their mouths were, and through the Flathead Land Trust fundraising and the Flathead Lakers fundraising, raised almost $1 million of people that just donated to help any penny that needed to purchase that property, they threw in. And so just a really exciting project that here a few weeks ago we closed on and purchased those 700 plus acres. This one, different than the Summers project, will be a wildlife management area. And so wildlife management areas, similar to Coons, if folks are familiar with that one, west of town, these are managed primarily for wildlife habitat, but also for public access and recreation. And so it's not going to be a state park where we, you know, put in potentially campsites or any other kind of park amenities. This one will be managed more for its kind of natural state. However, unique to this one, the Gateway to Glacier Trail group is interested, as they have been working for many years, to put a trail system from the main Flathead Valley to Glacier National Park. And so this site will allow some of that trail system to go through it, which will also be another cool amenity that the public can use. So another really neat project to protect some land right there in an area that could be developed potentially. But we heard loud and clear from the public, including the county commissioners, the city of Columbia Falls, the city council, and lots or hundreds of residents who said, we would like you to purchase this and protect this for conservation value.
So this is 772 acres attached to everything else, so that this is going to be a nice big recreational area, or I should say a wilderness area.
Well, wildlife management area. Yeah. Right. So similar. Yep. We won't be doing any development in there, you know, but we wildlife management areas, we look as really critical places where our deer and elk herds get some rest in the wintertime. And so that's why this property will be closed, like our other wildlife management areas, after hunting season until early spring. And that's because, you know, these winter ranges are critical places for our wildlife when they're vulnerable during the winter. Mm-hmm. They need these areas where there's good cover. They've got food sources. You know, we see issues in other areas that don't have these wildlife management areas where deer and elk don't have anywhere to go. So unfortunately, they get into private land and agricultural land and eat alfalfa and eat hay, and it creates conflicts with private landowners. And so these wildlife management areas can be really critical for helping address those issues, but also maintaining just healthy herds so that we have hunting opportunities and wildlife populations that are sustainable.
See, I tried to make it a wilderness area, and that's not right.
Well, wilderness area would be more like Bob Marshall wilderness area. And, you know, that, no, it's, I mean, it's kind of
that. It's not going to be a no-touch type of
area. Nope. There will be some restrictions, you know, like no motorized use through there, but when it's open, it'll be open for hiking and bird watching. I mean, it's anybody who's been to this property knows it is it's amazing. You go and walk through it and you're like, I can't believe the city of Columbia Falls is just like right there across the river. Oh. So it's a pretty neat slice of land. We're so grateful for the outpouring of public support and for the landowners, CFAC, and then the Flathead Land Trust, you know, another piece of property. And I know some folks might be thinking, man, you guys are buying a lot of property right now. And to be honest, we are right now. You know, we've bought, you know, the Summers Beach State Park property, now this Bad Rock Canyon property. We also bought that Montebello fishing access site near Dayton on Flathead Lake. And that is relatively uncommon to have big projects like that where we're purchasing land. But really right now is, I think, kind of a watershed.
I think we'd better.
I think that's what we've heard. It's a watershed moment, I think, for growth. And so we've heard loud and clear from the public, and we've had these opportunities presented to us by these landowners too. We're not twisting anybody's arm while we still have some of these pieces of land that are maybe more suitable for conservation and public access, let's secure these now because the opportunity might be passing us.
One of the things we enjoy doing is getting out and doing some snowshoeing. And this has been an exceptional year for that because we've got a lot of snow out there. Nights, 3-4 foot. You know, we were up in the park. We like that area around Apgar for snowshoeing because it's fairly flat. And we just get out there and take that trail back around the Oxbow and go along the McDonald Creek there and just go all the way back around. And before you know it, you're at West Glacier.
It's a great time. It's almost an underrated time to go into the park right now. And I'm sure the Glacier Park folks will tell you about that. It's lots of cool opportunities. You know, Lone Pine State Park is another cool one. On my lunch breaks, if I've got a moment of quiet, I will try to run up to Lone Pine and just try to get a hike up and down real quick with either snowshoes or trail shoes. And
I don't know where the deer have gone, though. You know, the kamikaze deer have not been out on the road here lately. And when we were up there last weekend, usually the deer come out for their photo opportunities, and they weren't there.
Yeah, huh? Interesting. I wonder if they've tried to move to some places where they're looking for food, because as we like to put it, their groceries are buried right now with the snow, and so they're looking for food anywhere they can get it. And so it's a fun time of year, and my favorite activities, because when the sun comes out, you jump on it because you don't know when you might see it again. And cross country skiing, snowshoeing, ice fishing, I've heard, has been really good. I haven't been able to get out yet, but you know, the ice at places like Echo Lake and Smith Lake are looking really good. Island Lake is another kind of hidden gem for anybody who's looking for a new place to maybe explore. But the ice fishing has been great so far this year. And, you know, it's up here, we've got more lakes than anywhere else in the state. So we got lots of opportunities like that to get out.
Yeah. Talk with us a little bit about a story we had earlier this morning. Wyoming is now petitioning the federal government around the Yellowstone Park to delist the grizzly bears. I know that Governor Greg Gianforte would sure like to make that happen. Are we making any progress toward that?
Yeah, so Governor Gianforte and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks, we've signed on with the memorandum teaming up with Wyoming and Idaho to petition the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service for delisting of the Yellowstone area grizzly bears. And so that's something that is now in front of the Fish and Wildlife Service, and they have to respond within a certain time frame to either look into our petition or deny it. And then up here in Northwest Montana, we have one of the other grizzly bear populations in the Northern Continental Divide ecosystem. And Governor Gianforte and Fish, Wildlife, and Parks has filed a petition with the U.S. Fish and Wildlife Service to petition or to delist that population of grizzly bears as well. And we feel the population has biologically recovered. We have met the goal that was set out for us, you know, when grizzly bears were listed in the 1970s. And to me, this is really a success story. I think it's something that we should really be proud of as Americans, that, you know, other countries in the world don't have things like the Endangered Species Act. And when grizzly bears in the 1970s were listed, there were a few hundred left in the lower 48 states. And here today, we now have over 1,000 grizzly bears in Northwest Montana, another 1,000 in the Yellowstone ecosystem. Those are just two of the ecosystems. You know, the Bitterroot, we don't have any down there yet. The Cabinet Yak up by Libby, that one still only has 50 to 55 grizzly bears. So we still have work to do in some of these other areas. But in these two main ecosystems near Glacier Park and near Yellowstone National Park, we have done it. We have shown that the Endangered Species Act works. Americans, we've taken steps to help limit conflicts with grizzly bears by, you know, taking bear resistant containers into the backcountry, or when you go into Glacier Park, you know, you have to properly store your food. And that was something 20, 30 years ago we weren't doing as Americans. We were leaving garbage out. We were at the parks literally putting garbage out to have bear and putting up bleachers to watch grizzly bears come in and eat. And that was leading to huge issues where bears were food conditioned and habituated and then getting into conflicts with humans. And so more grizzly bears were dying. We've taken steps to limit the mortality on these grizzly bears. And here we are 30 years later with over 2,000 alone in these two ecosystems, which I think is a remarkable achievement and something we should be proud of as Americans for bringing back the grizzly bear, this iconic native species in America. And I think we need to show that the Endangered Species Act works, because it does work. And that's what delisting is all about. You know, when an animal's put on the Endangered Species Act, it's not supposed to be like a wilderness where you designate a wilderness like the Bob Marshall and it's permanently protected as a wilderness. The Endangered Species Act is meant to be a somewhat temporary thing. And I think we need to show that it works.
But we're not talking about when we delist them, we're going to go out and start shooting these bears. We're not going to start doing that.
Well, if bears were delisted, you could have a hunting season, but that is something that would have to go through a very extensive public process. So our Fish and Wildlife Commission in Montana would regulate that through public input. They would put in standards and guidelines for what that hunting season is, just like we hunt black bears. You know, we hunt black bears, we hunt other game species, we hunt wolves, you know, I'm biased, but I think we do a good job at that at Fish, Wildlife, and Parks. We have very devoted, dedicated, skilled biologists who keep a close eye on these populations to ensure that we're not hurting the long-term sustainability of these populations while offering public opportunity for hunting. And really what I think that comes down to is social values, because biologically we know how to do this. We can do this now. We've learned a lot. We've demonstrated with our management of other species, I think, that we can do this responsibly and in a way that does not lead to a long-term decline in the species. But this is all a public process. So just because they're delisted doesn't mean that it would be, you know, gangbusters going after an unregulated killing of grizzly bears. Absolutely not.
And the other part of it is that we still, the idea of moving a bear, I've loved the idea of picking these bears up and moving them up to the cabinet range where they need more bears. They need more pears up there. The trouble is they seem to find their way back here. And
it's difficult.
Sometimes it takes them about a week to get back here again. So all that work that we've gone through to relocate the bear sometimes doesn't work.
It's tough, you know, John. Anytime us as humans try to force our will upon wildlife species, it's a slippery slope. And so you're absolutely right. You know, when you try to do augmentation, where we take a bear and move it into the cabinet yak to help boost that population's mm-hmm. numbers and also genetics, you don't know what, I mean, it's not like there's a fence around that ecosystem or we can tell that bear, hey, don't do it, don't come back. Yep. Because these bears move a lot. And so natural connectivity, I think, is going to be, you know, the key. But also we've shown through augmentation that we can move some of these bears if we have to just literally capture them. It's, you know, the key is, and this is where, again, we have such smart, dedicated biologists who do this and wildlife managers. Because people ask us, why don't you move more bears to the cabinet yak? You're catching bears all the time by Glacier Park. Why don't you just go take them up there? And it's because, like you said, we have to pick a bear that's going to go to the cabinet yak and want to stay there. So when they capture a bear, say, up the South Fork, you know, is that going to be a similar type habitat that this bear grew up in and is used to living in and used to finding food sources in? Because if it's not, if it's a completely different type of landscape where that bear grew up, and you go throw him up in the Rocky Cabinet Mountains, yeah. It's going to say, I'm not used to this. Get me out of here. I want to go back to the nice the nice meadows in Big Creek in the Bob. And so it's our bear specialists really are very selective. We also don't like capturing bears that have been in conflict. So they've potentially gotten used to eating chickens or they're getting into garbage. We don't really like moving those bears to places like the Cabinet Yak. Yeah. We don't actually. We will not move a conflict bear to those ecosystems. We catch bears that have a clean record, so to speak, and we'll move those bears only, because the conflict bears, we got to keep a closer eye on those ones. We don't want to be moving bears that are going to just create trouble.
And yeah, we don't want to send our troubles to somebody else.
Exactly. Yeah, yeah. Exactly. So it's tricky, John. There's no easy answer when it comes to us trying to delegate what wildlife do.
Yeah. Always a great conversation with Fish, Wildlife, and Parks Regional Information and Education Program Manager, Dylan Tavish. Dylan, thanks so much, Dylan.
Hey, it's so good to see you, John. Thanks so much for having me and wishing you a safe 2022.
And you too.